The water had seeped into his toes by the time he reached his car. "The white chocolate," he hissed at Nora as he crawled behind the wheel. She was wiping her eyes. "What is it now?" he demanded.
"I just talked to Blair."
"What? How? Is she all right?"
"She called from the airplane. She's fine."
Nora was biting her lip, trying to recover.
"Exactly how much does it cost to phone home from 30,000 feet?" Luther wondered. He'd seen phones on planes. Any credit card will do. Blair had one he'd given her, the type where the bills are sent to Mom and Dad.
"From a cell phone up there to a cell phone down here, probably at least $10.
"And for what?"
"I'm fine, Mom. Haven't seen you in almost an hour. We all love each other. We'll all miss each other. Gotta go, Mom."
The engine was running, though Luther didn't remember starting it.
"You forgot the white chocolate?" Nora asked, fully recovered.
"No, I didn't forget it. They didn't have any."
"Did you ask Rex?"
"Who's Rex?"
"The butcher."
"No, Nora, for some reason I didn't think to ask the butcher if he had any white chocolate hidden among his chops and livers."
She yanked the door handle with all the frustration she could muster.
"I have to have it. Thanks for nothing." And she was gone.
"I hope you step in frozen water," Luther grumbled to himself. He fumed and muttered other unpleasantries. He switched the heater vents to the floorboard to thaw his feet, then watched the large people come and go at the burger place. Traffic was stalled on the streets beyond. "How nice it would be to avoid Christmas," he began to think. "A snap of the fingers, and it's January 2nd. No tree, no shopping, no meaningless gifts, no tipping, no clutter and wrappings, no traffic and crowds, no fruitcakes, no liquor and hams that no one needed, no Rudolph and Frosty, no office party, no wasted money." His list grew long. He huddled over the wheel, smiling now, waiting for heat down below, dreaming pleasantly of escape. She was back with a small brown sack which she tossed beside him just carefully enough not to crack the chocolate while letting him know that she'd found it and he hadn't.
"Everybody knows you have to ask," she said sharply as she yanked at her shoulder harness.
"Odd way of marketing," Luther mused, in reverse now. "Hide it by the butcher, make it scarce. Folks will clamor for it. I'm sure they'll charge more if it's hidden."
"Oh, hush, Luther."
"Are your feet wet?"
"No."
"Yours?"
"No."
"Then why'd you ask?"
"Just worried."
"Do you think she'll be all right?"
"She's on an airplane. You just talk to her.
I mean, down there in the jungle."
"Stop worrying, okay? The Peace Corps wouldn't send her into a dangerous place."
"It won't be the same."
"What?"
"Christmas."
"It certainly will not," Luther almost said. Oddly, he was smiling as he worked his way through traffic.
2. With his feet toasty and besocked with heavy wool, Luther fell fast asleep and woke up even faster. Nora was roaming. She was in the bathroom flushing and flipping lights. Then she left for the kitchen, where she fixed an herbal tea. Then he heard her down the hall in Blair's room, no doubt staring at the walls and sniffling over where the years had gone. Then she was back in bed, rolling and jerking covers and trying her best to wake him. She wanted dialogue, a sounding board. She wanted Luther to assure her Blair was safe from the horrors of the Peruvian jungle. But Luther was frozen, not flinching at any joint, breathing as heavily as possible, because if the dialogue began again, it would run for hours. He pretended to snore, and that settled her down. It was after 11 when she grew still. Luther was wild-eyed, and his feet were smoldering. When he was absolutely certain she was asleep, he eased from the bed, ripped off the heavy socks and tossed them into a corner, and tiptoed down the hall to the kitchen for a glass of water. Then a pot of decaf. An hour later, he was in his basement office at his desk with files open, the computer humming, spreadsheets in the printer, an investigator searching for evidence. Luther was a tax accountant by trade, so his records were meticulous. The evidence piled up, and he forgot about sleep. A year earlier, the Luther Crank family had spent $6,100 on Christmas. $6,100. $6,100 on decorations, lights, flowers, a new Frosty, and a Canadian spruce. $6,100 on hams, turkeys, pecans, cheese balls, and cookies no one ate. $6,100 on wines and liquors and cigars around the office. $6,100 on fruitcakes from the firemen and the rescue squad and calendars from the police association.
$6,100 on Luther for a cashmere sweater he secretly loathed and a sports jacket he'd worn twice, and an ostrich skin wallet that was quite expensive and quite ugly and, frankly, he didn't like the feel of. On Nora for a dress she wore to the company's Christmas dinner and her own cashmere sweater, which had not been seen since she unwrapped it, and a designer scarf she loved. $6,100. On Blair, $6,100 for an overcoat, gloves, and boots, and a Walkman for her jogging, and of course the latest, slimmest cell phone on the market. $6,100 on lesser gifts for a select handful of distant relatives, most on Nora's side. $6,100 on Christmas cards from a stationer three doors down from Chip's in the district, where all prices were double. $6,100 for the party, an annual Christmas Eve bash at the Crank home. And what was left of it? Perhaps a useful item or two, but nothing much. $6,100. With great relish, Luther tallied the damage as if it had been inflicted by someone else. All evidence was coming neatly together and making a very strong case. He waffled a bit at the end, where he'd saved the charity numbers. Gifts to the church, to the toy drive, to the homeless shelter, and the food bank. But he raced through the benevolence and came right back to the awful conclusion. $6,100 for Christmas. 9% of my adjusted gross, he said in disbelief. $6,100 cash. All but $600 non-deductible.